serving the coast side. KHMV LP 100.9 FM, Half Moon Bay.
Friday's here. Time for Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast, with your host, Reuben Truthmaker.
You can't handle the truth.
And Libby Streetwise.
Get out!
The phones are lighting up, and you guys are live.
This is Reuben Truthmaker. This is Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast. Yeah, I sound a little weird this morning. I'm having an echo in the studio, and I feel like I'm losing my mind. Okay, so I won't be doing that anymore. Let's just go right to the show. All right, I mentioned No Livy this week. There's a book signing and spa opening tour along the New Jersey Gold Coast. That's right, the New Jersey Gold Coast. I was once invited to do such a ribbon-cutting situation, or a ribbon-cutting at a Rotten Robbie in Brawley, until I realized they were going to pay me in Skittles, and Skittles don't pay the PG&E bill. So, there you go. All right on that one. All right. As you notice, I am missing Livy this morning. She does handle the technical audio situations, but such is the life of a radio celebrity, so they tell me. All right, let's get right to the topics today. And those topics are attack of the drones. Yes, attack of the drones. You're going to hear all about that. Hawk rescue and of pump tracks and bike control patrols. All right, Half Moon Bay. It's wet out there. Be careful. Okay, it's one of those things where, like, the first rain of the year, you never quite know what exactly is going to happen out there. And the roads are wet and slick. You get your gutters overflow, right? Suddenly you walk out the front door and there's a waterfall coming down on your head because you forgot to clean out your gutters. The problem I'm having is I have an older vehicle, and it's, you know, got a little bit of rust on it and whatnot. And I got in that vehicle this morning, and there was literally a waterfall of rain coming down right through the roof into where I was sitting in the driver's seat. Apparently, I must have a rust spot or something. The water's coming right through, and that's making a lot of fun for me trying to drive here. I had to drive with basically an umbrella in the car. Yes, it is an older vehicle, but I enjoy that it has no display on it, has no GPS, and it has these old-fashioned things called hand cranks for the windows. Yes, I do enjoy that, but starting to show its age a little bit, maybe such as myself. Okay. All right. Coastal Windage is brought to you by the Half Moon Bay Brewing Company. Go check them out. I usually laud their outdoor seating, their patio dining. Right now, at this exact moment, maybe not the best, most enticing place to go. However, they also have the indoor dining, and I believe that they have some covers on the outdoor. It's a wonderful location, and you got to check that out. All right. Thank you to the Half Moon Bay Brewing Company for sponsoring this show for several years now. Definitely appreciate that. Okay. Let's see. This is a live call-in talk radio show, Coastal Windage. However, we're doing a lot of work on the studio right now, and the AM is not on. If you've tried to listen on the 1710, rockin' 1710, you'll notice that that is down for a while, temporarily, until we get our new equipment fully in place. But you can still listen at 100.9 FM or on the Internet anywhere in the world with an Internet connection at khmbradio.com. All right, let's get on to the show here. A couple of announcements. This is important. This is what we do here on the show, right? We let people know what's going on around town. And that is important. That's one of the reasons we do this show. So there's a local drop-off recycling event on Saturday in El Granada. If you live in El Granada, Miramar, Princeton, or Clipper Ridge, tomorrow is your day to get rid of stuff you can't recycle or throw away at the curb. And this is definitely important, right? Because it's hard to get that microwave into your trash can, and you're not allowed to do that anyway. So this is the Recology Local Drop-Off Recycling Event. It happens quarterly. I believe it happens in all of the Mid-Coast communities. Tomorrow's is in El Granada. It's at the Burnham Strip. There's free disposal, no fees or charges. Masks and ID or proof of residency are required. So please wear your mask, okay, to help out the workers that are coming to your car. They come to your car, they get the stuff, you don't get out of your car. One drop-off per household. Again, don't be that person, okay? Don't be that person that comes with a huge dump truck of stuff and then gets, when you're told that it's too much or it's the wrong materials he can't bring, gets upset about it. Okay, do your research. Listen to Coastal Windage. So this is some example of some things that you can bring. Small appliances, electronic equipment, fluorescent bulbs, styrofoam, metal, tires, up to four. Again, not a truckload of tires. Up to three cans of yard waste and things of that like. Now, what you cannot bring, don't bring this, please. Hazardous waste of any kind. Pressure-treated wood, household trash, motor oil, construction debris, garden hoses, suitcases, packing peanuts, and more. Okay, those are things that you are not allowed to bring. All right, so let's stick with that. All right, okay. That's 8 to 12 at the Burnham Strip in El Granada. Okay. Also this weekend, there's an antique show, the Half Moon Bay Antique Show and Sale at the IDES Hall on Main Street. That's Saturday and Sunday, 10 to 5 on Saturday, 10 to 6, I think, on Sunday, or maybe it's the other way around. $6 to get in. It's worth it. Check it out. There's some really, really cool stuff there. If you heard earlier in the show, I drive an old car. I like old stuff. And what better place to find old stuff than in an antique show? And they usually have some pretty good stuff here, so check that out. You're going to be inside anyways. Why not go mill around and see some cool stuff? Not sure this qualifies as cool. In fact, it's very scary and dangerous, but unique, I guess? Interesting? Noteworthy. Ha. Thank you. Noteworthy is the word I was looking for there. There was a head-on collision yesterday in Devil's Slide on the... I'll call it the backside, the north side, down the hill going down into Pacifica. Kind of a steep hill with some curves, a little difficult to see. And on a wet, slippery day like yesterday, you can only imagine. So a head-on collision probably doesn't seem that unusual. However, one of the vehicles involved was a garbage truck. Now, I mean, the scene was pretty horrific to see. It hit a small kind of SUV crossover type vehicle, which crushed the whole front end of it, as you would imagine, you know, being a small vehicle. Apparently they're built to crumple like that. The cabin of the vehicle looked to be okay, so I don't think there was any serious injuries. But it's just how do you collide with a garbage truck? It was going, I'm not sure if it was going up or downhill, but it's probably going pretty slow. I'm trying to envision it, how that would happen. It reminds me of one time my family and I, we were vacationing in the Caribbean island nation of Grenada, which is a pretty sleepy country in terms of development. The roads are pretty basic and pretty small. And so we were taking a drive around the island, which is an adventure in itself. Grenada has no road signs. There are no wayfinding road signs at all. You're on your own. And good luck finding a map of any kind. So we decided to go off on an adventure. We hadn't gone more than a couple miles through the main city there, the capital, St. George, I think, Prince George. I'm sorry, I forgot the name of the capital of the city of Granada. But anyways, we were going through there, came to a big traffic jam where we sat for a while, finally came up to see what it was. It was a garbage truck and another car had collided at probably like a mile an hour, and they were, you know, basically touching bumpers, which had clogged the whole small street there and everything. And there was no police. There was no tow truck. It looked like those two cars were going to be there for a while, and everybody had kind of improvised and figured out a way to work around this big garbage truck and this other vehicle that were blocking the road. So here in the United States, we quickly worked to clean that out and got traffic flowing again, but I guess there was some backup there yesterday. Okay, let's give you the air quality report. We heard earlier, about 15 minutes ago, Stan Warren Luttrell give you the weather update, which is important, especially on a day like this or a weekend like this. And it sounds like it's going to be this and more of the same. Yeah, what is this moisture coming out of the sky? I don't know. Let's get used to it, though, because it looks like it's going to be here for a while. Anyways, that was from Stan Warren Luttrell, our resident weather expert and narrator. And now we'll give you the air quality report, which is the air you're breathing. What's it like out there? What's the quality? We get this from purpleair.com. Again, let's look at the scale. 0 to 50, amazing. 51 to 100, very, very good. Over 100, nah. Okay, in El Granada today, 13, which is really, really good, right? Take a couple of deep breaths. 7 in Half Moon Bay, even better, but that is nothing. I mean, 7? Ha! You might as well be in Los Angeles or Fresno. Today, in Redwood City, 0. 0 in Redwood City. It literally doesn't get any better in terms of air quality. And if you don't want to go to Redwood City, head down to Santa Cruz, where it is also 0 today. Air quality is 0, which in this case means as good as it gets. Literally as good as it gets. Okay, this is the part of the show where it gets a little sketchy for me. Okay, we're doing all this work, right, on the studio. We got a bunch of new equipment on the outside of the studio for broadcast purposes, I suppose. But inside the studio here, we mentioned we're adding a second tier to the viewing area, the live viewing area. That's not ready yet. But the whole inside of the studio now is just like a wall of monitors. There's monitors everywhere. I don't know which one is which. They tell me there's one where there's the live email feed. Since our phone is part of the technological upgrades, the phone is offline right now. So we are not a live talk radio show, but we're not a live call-in show at the moment. But we do take emails, and supposedly one of these monitors has our email feed. And you know what? I'm going to go out on a high wire here and try to maybe answer or read a couple of emails that maybe come in this morning if I can figure it. One of the problems with these monitors is they keep timing out, right? And so then I was given the code to unlock them, but I feel like I'm spending half the time on the keyboard unlocking these monitors. I wish we could just keep them open. That would make it a lot easier for me. All right, let's see. Here's an email from last week that came in. This is from Yo Ahab regarding the book I mentioned, 2 Years Before the Mass by Richard Henry Dana, written in 1840. Yo Ahab writes, I tried to read that book in college and found it interminably boring. Ouch. About 20 years later, I came across it at a lodge I was staying at in Mendocino and couldn't put it down. That was exactly my experience. The seafaring descriptions are quite lively, but it's Dana's descriptions of an almost untouched pre-Gold Rush California that really captured my attention. One shack in all of San Francisco does not compute. Totally agreed, Yo Ahab. Anybody interested in the history of California must read this book, 2 Years Before the Mass by Richard Henry Dana. It, in addition to mentioning literally one-horse towns like Los Angeles and Santa Barbara, it also mentions Año Nuevo, Monterey, the Farallones, San Francisco, as the Yo Ahab writes, San Francisco had literally one building. I mean, in addition to a crumbling Presidio and Mission Dolores, it had one, like, trading shack. Interesting part of this book is the epilogue. Richard Henry Dana comes back in 1859 and describes what has changed in the 25 years since he first visited. Can you imagine the change from 1835 to 1859? What happened in between there? The gold rush, right, in 1849, and that completely transformed California and especially the Bay Area. Okay, here we go. I'm attempting to read an email that has just come in. I've cleared the code. The display is up. Here we go. This is from listener All a Twitter regarding the rumor that Livy is leaving the show. Huh. Is there any truth to the rumor that Livy is going to leave the show for greener pastures? I heard she's either going to a big station in L.A. or she's going to start a podcast with Melissa Rivers. What now? this is news to me. First of all, how can the pastures get any greener than our beloved coastside? Am I right, coastsiders? Can I get a huzzah from the coastside? Thank you. And second, where did you hear this rumor now? Third, okay, all of Twitter. You know, Livy's a big star, and it's hard to keep them down on the farm when they've seen Gay Perry. You know what I mean? Okay, so she's under contract through the season, but she may be testing the free agent waters. You know, it's a big name out there. Could she's looking for that big, you know, post-rookie contract that's just really going to put her over the top. All right, here's an email from Peter Pumpkin Eater about the pumpkin way off. Way cool to see. He left out a word here. She, whoever, I'm assuming it's a he, Peter Pumpkin Eater. Way cool see our town starting to get back to normal with the pumpkin way off. They needed a whiskey tent, though, and maybe an area where people could pay a few bucks to charity or something and then get to take a couple of whacks at one of those giant gourds with a sledgehammer. Next year! Exclamation point. Oh, good Lord. Whiskey, giant pumpkins, and sledgehammers? Now, that would probably make the national news and a big mess. Speaking of the pumpkin way off and all the people that were there and how it was, how it's starting to get back to normal right around town, I was just this morning, as I usually do before a Coastal Windage show, got to get jacked up on sugar, right? And I like to get my donut holes at the Half Moon Bay Bakery on Main Street. Go check it out. That's a historic shop with a lot of cool pictures of the Half Moon Bay drag strip at the airport and other pictures. And one of the cool historic pictures they have a giant picture behind the bakery case of basically the IDES Hall parking lot before that was developed. I'd say the picture's from about 1900. I don't see any cars or anything, but you can definitely tell it's exactly from the taken from the IDES Hall looking back across the parking lot at Main Street. And there's about 1,000 people there. And this was, I'm going to say, I don't see any automobiles or anything in the picture. I'm going to say it's around 1900. But that's 120 years ago. We were all, people in Half Moon Bay were gathering on literally the same spot that we all gathered last Monday for the pumpkin way off. I mean, I just think that's pretty cool that we're treading the same ground that people have been treading in Half Moon Bay to gather for over 120 years. So I just think that's cool, but that's me. Okay, here's another live email. You know what? I'm going to make a judgment call and just skip this one because the subject line is COVID count, and I don't know. Maybe I'll read it later in the show, but I just don't want to get into an argument about COVID and vaccinations and masks and whatnot, okay? Take care of yourself. Think about other people. Do the right thing. All right, here we go. Pick your poison. We've received many emails from people asking us to read out the pick your poison list again. We haven't done it in a couple weeks. But Livy and I have decided that until we can get our KHMB webpage for Coastal Windage restructured so we can put supporting materials up there, which we haven't finished doing that yet, we're going to pause the PYP, the pick your poison. Feel free to send your ideas for the next list, but in the meantime, what we'll do is we'll wait till we can get that up on the website, and then we'll resume our little game of that. Okay, now is the part of the show, I guess, where I have my technology story. We'll call it a story. Piece. Rant, maybe. Attack of the drones. Okay. Settle in, Coastsiders. Because, you know, I love to talk about technology. All right. I know that we live in a two-headed cult of technology and commerce right now, from which there is no escape or dissent. And when I say that, I mean you don't really have a choice. You know, it's not like you can choose whether you want to carry a cell phone or not. Or it's not like you can choose whether you want to monitor your email address or whatever. Life has changed, and now the expectation is you will be doing those things. And everything is structured, life is structured around our devices and technology. So you don't have a choice anymore. But I guess, so that's not anything shocking. But I guess what still amazes me is what people see as progress with regards to technology. And progress, I put in quotation marks. Last season on this show, we reported on the development of 500-pound delivery drones by a company called Mighty Fly that are being developed and tested at the Half Moon Bay Airport. Quote, autonomous vertical takeoff and landing cargo aircraft capable of carrying up to 500 pounds across a 600-mile range. Which I don't, so a 500-pound missile flying 600 miles autonomous, how many of those are going to be out there anyways? Quote from the company's website, quote, developing the future of logistics, freeing the flow of goods from flat 2D constraints into using the open 3D airspace all around us. That's on their website as, you know, promotional positive stuff. And that's exactly my point. Using the open 3D airspace all around us. I'd rather they didn't. Okay? Now another company, or maybe they're related, it's hard to tell. Maybe they're probably sharing technology or at least working together. This new company is at the Half Moon Bay Airport developing more of these autonomous flying missiles. And knowing that curmudgeons such as myself will be grumping about visual pollution and our over-automated world, Zipline, that's the name of this other company, has found a marketing angle that is unassailable, right? I mean, you got to think of the marketing, like how can we anticipate the criticisms and cut that off at the knees so that we're all good? Okay, so what is their no, this isn't a cool hobby that somebody's trying to figure out how to monetize. No, that wouldn't fly. Yeah, that was a joke. I know. I need my rimshot person. Okay. Put the coffee down. Put your finger on the rimshot button. Next time I tell a joke, please help me out here, okay? Otherwise, people don't know I'm telling a joke. All right. No, this isn't the latest tech solution looking for funding and a problem in need of solving. No, this isn't about making money, reputations, or history. This is according to Zipline, of course, not me. No, this is about saving lives, right? Because you can't argue with that, right? You could argue with a stock price valuation or going public or trying to make money and, you know, make a reputation, but you can't argue with saving lives. These drones are for delivering blood, vaccines, and anti-venom medicines to, quote, remote hospitals in minutes. And to their credit, Zipline has done this in rural Ghana and Rwanda, and that makes sense, and I'm sure it was very helpful there. Okay, so I could understand that, although I guess that's what helicopters are for. But so I'm not quite sure why we need autonomous drones doing this and why money and investment is being put into that instead of the infrastructure that's already there. But okay, so it's happening. It happened there and it did a good thing, which I'm all happy about. But does anybody think that that's the end game for these huge delivery missiles? That all of this technology and development is being done to deliver some blood vaccines and anti-venom to rural hospitals in the continent of Africa? No. How long until Amazon and Zipline hook up if they already haven't? And how long until there are literally dozens of drone delivery missiles flying around our communities at any given time, like a scene out of the movie Blade Runner? Yes, we're starting, apparently, with the delivery of critical medical supplies to save lives. Can't argue with that. But that ain't where the money is. You know, rural hospitals in Rwanda are probably not paying a lot of money for this. And hopefully, Zipline is doing this as a humanitarian move for free. But, okay, the money is in commercial retail household goods delivery in the United States. So that's where we're heading on that one. I mean, so, again, just wait until there are dozens or more of these drone delivery missiles flying around in our airspace. Enjoy looking at the horizon now. Enjoy looking at the ocean now with some birds flying or maybe a plane at 30,000 feet because it's probably going to change. Don't say I didn't warn you about this. Okay, and while I'm ranting about 500-pound delivery missiles, a company called Ghost Robotics, and, you know, that's just a name that makes me feel very comfortable to begin with. A company called Ghost Robotics unveiled their latest, quote, benevolent, unquote, gift to the world last week at the annual meeting of the Association of the United States Army. So they didn't present it at, you know, the Chamber of Commerce or, you know, MIT or something. No, this was
at a function for the U.S. Army. And what their gift to the world? A robot dog armed with a sword defense system special purpose unmanned rifle, otherwise known as a sniper rifle. So they've got a remote-controlled robotic dog, or maybe it's remote-controlled, maybe it's somehow autonomous, as we'll get to the next thing here, that's now carrying a huge gun. All right, yeah, I can't see how that could go wrong in any way, except for every movie ever made in the 80s, okay? Every science fiction movie ever made in the 80s. But no, they're robotic dog carrying a huge gun? Nah, there's nothing wrong with that. But we're not finished. Last week, as well, at Oregon State, showed off its own contribution to the end of the world with the first ever bipedal robot that can run a 5K. And how did they do? They did this with a grant they got from the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. So let's see. Ghost Robotics showing off their armed robot dog at a United States Army function. And Oregon State showing off its bipedal robot that can run a 5K on its own with money it got from the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. And they've nicknamed this bipedal robot Cassie. Because you can't call it something scary like the T-1000 or anything. Got to call it Cassie. You know, it's human-like. It's your friend. And it's being developed using something very scary-sounding, quote, deep reinforcement learning algorithm. And why did this robot get built? To deliver blood and vaccines to remote locations? No. Quote, to deliver packages and even help people in their homes. Oh, Cassie. Anybody see where I'm going with this? No? All right, let me help you with a quote from a robotics professor at Oregon State. Quote, in the not very distant future, everyone will see and interact with robots in many places in their everyday lives. Robots that work alongside us and improve our quality of life. Right. I mean, you got to add that part in, right? I mean, this is marketing, right? You got to sell. You got to sell. So they're going to work alongside us and improve our quality of life and then replace us, not just in the workplace, but in the world. That futurist hat on right now. We're not talking in the near future, 2 years from now, when there's a robot, checking you out at Safeway or what at the DMV or whatever. No. We're talking about 20 years down the line. This is the next phase of human evolution. As we gradually graft human consciousness, what makes us human, onto silicon and carbon fiber until one day we are more machine than animal. Well, we are heading in that direction. Absolutely. Bipedal robots. We're working so hard to develop a sentient computer. And I'm just saying that the second that there is a sentient computer, and that being a computer that can truly think for itself, a computer that has emotions, I mean, the second that happens, it's over. Okay, so I don't understand the headlong rush to develop that. Again, the God complex of humanity, we will end up being our own agents of extinction, and we are going to do it with the thing that distinguishes us from the rest of the animal kingdom, which is our intelligence. That is going to be the thing that causes our own extinction, because we just can't help ourselves. We want to be God. We want to create life. We want to make, apparently, convenience the thing of which, around which all of humanity is organized. Okay, so in anticipation of that, you might want to queue up the Terminator movies for a glimpse of where we're headed. I recommend Terminator 2 Judgment Day. To me, that gives the best view of how we got there and where we are going. Okay, so yes, you're welcome for that. right, that is my technology rant for the day, but it's not just a rant. Seriously, it's thinking ahead to the future, okay? Futurism, which is not making predictions about who's going to win the football game this weekend, okay? That's not futurism. Futurism is looking at the past and developing trends and trying to anticipate where that's going to be decades out, okay? Decades out. And I don't know how somebody would argue that this isn't where we're headed. All right, looks like I'm getting a notification on one of these huge screens. It's very distracting that there's an email. Okay, let me see. Okay, oh, all right, let me type in the code. Here we go. All right, screen cleared, and there it is. Okay, it's an email from our friend Julie Mel from Beach Break Entertainment, and Julie wants to let us know that tomorrow, I don't know if it's going to happen, but tomorrow, Saturday the 23rd, Julie and Beach Break Entertainment have a movie, a drive-in movie, an outdoor movie, right? That's what Julie has pioneered here on the coast. They're screening The Princess Bride, a classic of classics, right? An 80s classic, but just one of these quote machine movies, right? If you are of a certain age, you could probably rip off like 10 or 15 lines, quoted lines from that movie right now just from deep memory, okay? So they're screening The Princess Bride tomorrow at The Barn, okay, The Barn on Highway 1. It's a fundraiser for Half Moon Bay High School's real-life learning program. The Barn will be open, selling their amazing food, fun drinks, and concessions, via costume contest, and some prizes. Bring your own blankets and chairs. Tickets available at Beach Break, www.beachbreakentertainment.com. Don't know what the status is on with the rain, but if you're interested, Princess Bride, great, hilarious movie for both adults and kids. Kids will definitely love it, so check that out. Beach Break Entertainment, Julie Mel, thank you for the email on that, and I feel pretty proud that I was actually able to pull it up and read it, especially after reading a technology rant. Like, that seems like if the computers were listening, if Alexa and Siri and their chums were listening to my anti-technology rant, I'm surprised they didn't get together in the wires and cables here of these computers and try to mess me up when I was reading that email. But, haha, I prevailed. Okay. All right. Hawk Rescue. Okay. So, yeah, I just went on a technology rant, and it sounds bad, and I'm not going to lie to you. I'm worried about it. But you know what? There's still good things happening in the world at the moment. There's still incredible things like great blue herons and harbor seals and hawks, red-tailed hawks, red-shouldered hawks. I love the raptors that we see around here. My son and I love when we're driving to school or to basketball practice or something, seeing how many hawks we can spot on the wires or flying around. Hawks have a special place in my life from where I grew up out in the Hardscrabble Hills of East County, San Diego. Definitely hawk country, and it's hawk country out here, right? And we always tell my son that a red-tailed hawk is his spirit animal, if you believe in that kind of thing, because as we were driving to the hospital on the day that he ended up being born, my wife was in labor, she was in the passenger seat, we're driving down Highway 1 with that, I wish we had a photo of us from, you know, like a traffic intersection camera photo, you know, a red light camera that just shows like the driver's face in the past, because it would show us with that look that probably everybody has on their way to the hospital to have their first child, a look of borderline panic. So anyways, we probably had that look on our face. We were driving, we were just passing the stoplight at Frenchman's Creek. It was green. We're going through there, and a hawk swooped out of Frenchman's Creek housing area there, literally right across our windshield, like showed us its belly, right across the windshield. I don't know how we didn't hit it, and then swooped into the eucalyptus there over on the other side of the highway, Sweetwood. I mean, that thing was like a foot off the windshield, and my wife and I both looked at each other, and it kind of broke the tension of like, whoa, that was something to take our minds off of, you know, what we were on our way to experience, and you know, really kind of brought a smile to our faces of like, we love these birds, and here was one coming to make us feel better as we were stressing. And so we always tell our son that red-tailed hawk is your spirit animal for that reason. Okay, so earlier this week, Intrepid Coastsider Muckraker and General Do-Gooder David Oblovy posted to Nextdoor that he had located and helped to rescue a young first-year red-tail hawk that people had reported seeing was something attached to its legs, something hanging from its legs. There was a report of something similar earlier this summer, but this was down in Wavecrest, I think, near Wavecrest. And so David, and after seeing this post on Nextdoor, David and one of his sons spent several hours searching for the distressed bird, because this is the kind of thing that that my friend David does. He looks for ways that he can help out and help people and animals and situations. So he and his son located the bird and were able to bring it home for initial care and treatment. Now, this is not something I would recommend for normal folks, but if you know David, you know that he's really smart, and he really researches his things and knows what to do. And when it comes to caring for a wild animal or a person, David is really going to do his research. So I'm sure that he knew exactly what to do. He brought the bird home for some initial care and treatment, which includes kind of a monitoring period. How injured is this bird? And at what state was this bird? So, okay, let me back up for a second. So David found that the bird had two thick braided leather restraints attached to its legs. In falconry, these restraints are known as jesses. And they are, I'm not a falconer. I don't really understand it. David, in fact, has practiced falconry in the past, so he knows these things. But apparently these jesses are a way, I don't know, to keep the bird on your arm before it's released. And then they're supposed to be very lightweight so that the bird could fly away. I don't know if the jesses are supposed to stay on the hand or the leg. I'm not sure. But they're the ones that David found on this hawk were very heavy and thick. He said that they were so heavy and thick that the bird could barely fly. Okay, so the working theory here is that somebody, a novice, or let's just give the person the benefit of the doubt, a novice, was trying to their hand at falconry on the cheap and ignorant. The cheap being basically capturing a young red-tailed hawk chick, probably, and on the ignorant, not knowing what they were doing. And I guess that's really where the kind of the outrage is here. Why are you doing this? I mean, you're basically torturing this animal. These jesses were so heavy the animal couldn't fly. Somehow it got away, and now it's out in the wild, loose, but can barely fly, can't hunt, and was definitely in distress. So David brought it home, working now to evaluate the bird with raptor rescue providers. These are trained professionals that know how to rehabilitate raptors. And one of the things that they're trying to determine is whether this bird can feed itself, can hunt, can survive out in the wild, or whether it was taken at such a young age that it didn't learn the basics. I mean, you might think that a red-tailed hawk has instincts, and probably it does, but, you know, they're just like humans, right? There's a critical period during youth in which things are learned that are important to survive as an adult, and I think that's true with hawks as well. So David has the hawk currently at his house and is feeding it mice and bringing it along. In case you're interested in who I'm talking about, David was an interview guest on this show on August 28th, 2020. You can go to the KHMB website, click on the podcast tab for the shows in 2020, click on Coastal Windage, and you can listen to that interview with David, find out who he is and what he's all about. Okay, so hawk and owl rescue. There's a lot of science, technique, and process involved in raptor rehabilitation, especially now with the internet, when this information is easily disseminated and shared and provided. Okay, but back in my day, right, get in the Wayback Machine. Back in my day, in the early 70s, when I was a young child, we moved out to the boonies that I'm always describing. We used to live in, when I was born, our family lived in Pacific Beach, California, where my parents had moved with their respective families in the 50s, met each other, both from out of state, met each other there in middle school, were together in high school, got married, had children, had a house in the, lived in the little town, Pacific Beach, that they both grew up in. And then my dad got into collecting old cars and acquired so many that the neighbors started complaining that he was filling up all the alleyways and parking spots with his old jalopies. And so they looked for a place way out in the country where my dad could store all of his old cars. And so we found a place way out in the country, way, way out in the middle of nowhere. And so there was no bus service. There was no TV. There was no FM radio. There were no neighbors. But as you might imagine, there was plenty of wild animals, including lots of raptors. Well, in driving to town each day for school and to go to the post office, because we didn't have a mailbox, had to drive in 6 miles into town to the post office, occasionally we'd see coyotes or roadrunners running across the road. Haven't seen a roadrunner out there in decades, but in those early years, we would see roadrunners running across the road. And I remember one day we were driving to town. I was maybe five, and there was a large animal of some kind in the road. And so my mom slowed down, and it was a red-tailed hawk. And something had happened to it. It had been hit by a car or something. And so my mom didn't know what to do, so she drove back to the house and called my dad. And my dad said, well, you know, pick it up and bring it to the house, and we'll see what to do. So they brought it in, and we ended up rehabilitating this red-tailed hawk. I can't remember what was wrong with it. And if our phone was working, which it'll be working in the next couple weeks, but my mom could probably, who's, you know, she's my mom, so she's probably listening to the show, she could probably call in and give the exact details. But I do remember we had it in this cage, and we would feed it little cutlets of meat. My mom would put a glove on and feed it cutlets of meat, and we did nurse it back to health, and we eventually, I remember the day that we released it. And, I mean, this is fantasy of a kid, right? But I remember my parents talking about it. We released it. It flew around. It landed on a big telephone pole. And I can remember my dad kind of maybe, maybe he was just saying this to me, but my dad wasn't that kind of person to say these kinds of things lightly. My dad would say that he felt like that hawk stayed around, like he recognized it, and it stayed around our house for a couple of years. And I want to believe that, because I remember the care and attention that my parents put into rehabilitating this hawk. Well, a few months later, same thing happened, driving home maybe from a Little League game or something. There was another large bird in the road. It turned out to be a great horned owl, and my parents did the same thing with that. Now, I have no idea how they did this in the times before the internet, but I do know they consulted the local veterinarian in town about, you know, maybe what to feed it or how much or when, or I don't know. But twice, with a great horned owl and a red-tailed hawk, my parents rescued a bird off the tarmac, brought it home, put it in a cage, fed it back, nursed it back to health, and then released it back into the wild. So I'm not advocating people go out and you know, try to find down birds to rehabilitate in their garage. But this story really touched me because it reminded me of those times as a youth and having those birds, and they are incredible. David's got some pictures up on Nextdoor. I mean, these birds are majestic. I mean, I it's kind of at a loss for words. So they're pretty amazing, and it definitely brings a, you know, kind of a tear to your eye to know that this bird was saved. It was not going to live, probably. It had these heavy restraints on it. Couldn't fly. Okay. All right, what's our next story here? You know, I do as little as possible with regard to the show. You know, they cashing the paycheck is enough. That's why we have the interns and the other support people here, to find topics, to gather the information, and then to just basically shove it in a bunch of note cards in front of my face as I roll in here at 8:55 on Friday morning. And you know, just be the talking head. So it'd be nice maybe if once in a while I looked at the note cards ahead of time to see what the topics were, but I kind of like that improvisational feel, right? Okay, so let's see what's next here. Pump tracks and bike patrols. Okay, this sounds interesting. All right, this is, you know, I like to ride my bike. I consider myself a cyclist and not a biker. This is a terminology that has to be gotten straight, right? A biker these days is a motorcycle rider. That if you say to someone, are you a biker, I'm envisioning heavy leather boots and a helmet, a full-face helmet, right? And maybe some leather gauntlet gloves or something. That's a biker. A cyclist is someone who rides a bicycle. And a cyclist is someone who rides a bicycle semi-seriously or a lot, as opposed to a person on a bike or a bike rider. You always see these articles in the paper about how a cyclist was hit in San Francisco, and I'm always like, oh, no, let me go read the story. I hope it's not somebody I know from, you know, from a race or a group ride or Strava or something. And then you read the article, and it's, you know, it's some person on some beater bike on their way to work or the laundromat or something. You know, it's not like a cyclist. It's a person riding a bike. Okay, so I personally make the distinction. Okay, so as a cyclist, I'm very into what's going on with anything involving bikes here on the coastside. And so I've been very eagerly watching the Quarry Park pump track situation. Remember, again, get in the Wayback Machine. Remember way back during the holidays of 2019 when local residents spontaneously got together and built an organic, handmade bicycle pump track in a few days amongst the trees in Lower Quarry Park? Remember that? And then remember the county was going to bulldoze it until more than 200 people showed up at an MCC meeting begging them not to? Remember that? That was in January of 2020. And then, as a response to that, the county promised to build a real, official, permitted pump track by July 2020. July 2020, remember that, right? It did happen. Go look it up. It did happen. We talked about it on this show. You can go check MCC, video of MCC meetings. Check the Half Moon Bay Review. This all happened. This is real. But then COVID hit, and there were delays. And then eucalyptus trees became the greatest threat to coastsiders since off-leash dogs. And that took priority. And so now, getting close to 2 years after that historic MCC meeting, I am proud to announce, ladies and gentlemen of the Coastside, that I have another project update. Yep. Following is the latest project schedule for our local El Dorado, also known as the Quarry Park Pump Track. So, supposedly, the plan now is that in January of 2022, 2 years after that MCC meeting, the approved project plans, and the project plans have been reviewed by the public and approved by all required entities that need to approve them, the approved project plans will go out to bid in January. So, not quite sure why we're waiting till January on that, but I'm, you know, again, if we had our phone line working, our good friend of the show, Rick from El Granada, could call in and let us know, because Rick is very involved with this. And, you know, I think I'm going to need to have Rick on the show in the next couple of weeks to give us an update on this. Okay. In February, after the project plans have gone out to bid, in February, a contract will be awarded to some development company. And if you hear some perturbation in my voice, yeah, I just made that word up, root word perturb. If you hear some of that in my voice, it's because I mentioned that the quote-unquote rogue pump track that the community built over the holidays in 2019, hand-built with hand tools in a few days by locals. But, and I've begged and pleaded with county officials to allow the public who's going to use this pump track and the residents of El Granada and others who want to get involved, to allow them to be part of the construction, to grab a shovel, to put their blood, sweat, and tears into the building of this pump track so that it really is a community installation, so that people can come back 20 years from now and say to their children and their grandchildren, hey, I helped build this thing when I was 12. But no, it's going to be, and also that would save a lot of money, but no, it's going to be bid, it's going to be, the contract's going to be awarded to some outside company, not a local Bay Area, local coastside company, not local coastside people, some outside company, And May to June, there will be construction with a target date for completion of July 2022. A full 2 years after the original promise date for this pump track. So I want to believe, I really do. We need that pump track. We've been waiting for that pump track. We've been waiting for something, anything, for our teens to do. A tot lot, a little playground with little kids' slides, does not do much for a 12 to 14-year-old. Okay? We have no ball fields here in El Granada. We have nothing for teens to do. We have no community center. We need this pump track. 2 years now. Okay. On a separate note, one that gives me, that I mean, at one level, I guess I get it, but on another level, my response is okay. And that is, the city is partnering with National Ski Patrol to promote safety and provide services on the coastal trail, the coastal bike path trail. The city has already signed a memo of understanding on this, so moving pretty quickly on this. And I guess the bike patrol that will be on the coastal trail will be reporting incidents, applying first aid, offering nominal repair assistance. There was no discussion of whether issues of criminal activity or personal security would be in the purview of the bike patrol. And here's the thing that, I mean, I just kind of like, I don't know, like roll my eyes a little bit at this. The program, this bike patrol program, for which the city has already signed a memo of understanding, would only cover the section of the coastal trail owned and operated by the city of Half Moon Bay, and that is between Kelly Avenue and Poplar Street. It's like a quarter mile. It's like 1,500 yards, 1,700 yards, something like that. I mean, it. Okay, so all of this memo of understanding and an article in the paper and everything for, and how many bike patrollers are there going to be for 1,500 yards of coastal trail? And what about the whole rest of it? All right, so again, it's a good thing, right, I guess? I guess why? You know, what is the real need for this? This is being courted by Rick Boulon, a longtime coastsider from Moss Beach, and Rick helped develop a similar program in Sacramento County that I think is over like 30 or 50 miles of bike paths. And that kind of makes sense, okay? That makes more sense. If this bike patrol was going to be working, patrolling or, you know, providing a presence on the bike path from Miramontes Road to Pacifica on the coastal trail bike path that extended from Miramontes Road to Pacifica, that would make a lot of sense to me. That's a lot of territory. It's remote. And if something, you get a flat tire or something's going wrong, you would want to hope that somebody would come along to help you out. Oh, what's that? I'm sorry. I'm just breaking news. There's no bike path that runs from Miramontes Road to Pacifica? Oh, okay. So we're focusing on getting bike patrol for 1,700 yards of paved bike path in the city of Half Moon Bay, but we can't seem to get any money, funding, attention, or energy into having a bike path that extends along the entire coastside. I mean, I guess where are the priorities here? A memo of understanding from the county to get the bike patrol, but let's focus on the bike path first. Let's get that in place first. Okay, Rick Boulon, the guy who's organizing this, said most of the work involved will be being an ambassador of sorts. Volunteers provide directions for where to buy bike parts or the nearest restaurant. I mean, none of these people are carrying a cell phone. Really, that's needed out there. Quote, says Boulon, a lot of it is just being visible on the trail and explaining how you need to be on the right side. Dogs don't need to be on a leash. Little things like that. Okay, so again, as an active cyclist and power user of the coastal trail several times a week, I am ambivalent about this at best. Is this needed? And why are we focusing on ambassadors patrolling the trail when we don't even have trails that, that go anywhere or provide the transportation avenues that we need here on the coast side? And somehow, maybe it's the word patrol. I mean, I know these are volunteers that are doing this for the right reason. So it's not that there's something nefarious going on here. But somehow it bothers me. The bike, there's like a, I don't, I'm not saying it's rational, okay? I acknowledge. I'm just, you're, I've peeled back the skin and the skull here, and you're peering into the scary recesses of my brain, and somehow it bothers me. There's like a vigilante feel to it, you know, like I'm going to be riding along, maybe, if, you know, minding my own business, but doing something, and the bike patrol is going to be on me. All right. Maybe it's because several police departments, sheriff's offices and whatnot have bike patrols now, you know, armed police officers on bikes. And so now we've got unarmed bike patrol on the coastal trail between Poplar and Kelly. But another thing is that this also confirms that the coastal trail is intended to be visitor serving. Okay. And that's one of the problems that I have here is that we don't even have a single bike path that runs, dedicated bike path that runs from Miramontes Road up to at least Monterra, if not all the way to Pacifica. I mean, that is what is needed. We don't have that. We've got pieces on both sides of Highway 1, some, and so we don't even have one way to get all the way there. But the coastal path offers the most complete path from Half Moon Bay to at least the harbor, but because it's visitors focused, if you're trying to get somewhere in a hurry, that's not the path for you. You're hooted down. There's kids on in strollers. There's people with dogs. There's people ambling along. There's bike riders on cruisers. Okay, I get it. But this volunteer bike patrol that's there to like tell people where restaurants are, where to get, that's clearly for people that don't live here. Okay, so once again, it's the message is the coastal path is not for a person trying to get down to their job at their job waiting tables at a restaurant. They don't want to drive on a busy Saturday. The coastal path is for visitors, and to me, that's what this volunteer bike patrol is about. And so, I guess that bothers me a little. However, I will say this: if somebody feels more comfortable, if it gives them a level of comfort to know that there's bike patrol out there and it gets them out on the trail, maybe they, you know, were concerned about something happening and they weren't going to go for a walk on the coastal trail. But now they know that there's bike patrol out there and they feel more comfortable going out and going for a walk, then that's a good thing, and I guess I can live with it then. But I'm just saying I don't think this is a necessary thing, and I wish that the priority was on building the bike paths themselves first, and then we can staff them. All right, if you're interested or want to join as a volunteer, and the program actually sounds pretty cool. You know, you get CPR training and some other training, and you get some cool gear. And, you know, I'm sure that it feels good to know that you're a volunteer out there for the purpose of helping people. So if you want to do that, go to coastalbikepatrol.org. Or check out the post about it on coastsidebuzz.com. And while I have like 1 minute left here, somehow we went from like 9:01 to 9:59 in the blink of an eye. But coastsidebuzz.com, you got to check this out. Michelle Dragony, the Coastal Butterfly, is crushing it. Go there. You will have an endless supply of articles that are coastside focused that are super, super interesting stuff that's not necessarily in the Half Moon Bay Review and that you certainly are not going to hear about on any kind of regional news outlets. So coastsidebuzz.com really surging to the forefront as a must-read website here on the coastside. Okay, last thing. Let's end this with a smile. Okay, I found this email. This is an email that I've read before on the show. I found this when I was looking back through some past shows for information about some story we did a couple weeks ago. I thought we could all use a good laugh. This is from our January 22nd, 2021 show from a listener calling themselves Crab Leg Jenkins. regarding chicken soup. I don't remember what that topic was, but here it is. It's a joke thing. Crab Leg Jenkins writes, why did the Coastside Chicken cross the road? And then provides like 10 answers. So why did the Coastside Chicken cross the road? Answer, it didn't. It's still waiting for a break in traffic. Answer, to prove it wasn't chicken. Answer, it was tired of being cooped up. Answer, to meet some chicks. Answer, because they haven't built a tunnel yet. Answer, to look for its lost cat. Answer, to make public comment at a county meeting and propose a crosswalk. Answer, because it was faster than driving. And the last one, I'll just add this one, although it's not as funny as those, but why did the Coastside Chicken cross the road? To pick up another unconnected segment of Bike Path. Hey-o, all right, that's all we have for today. We'll be back next Friday, and so will Livy. For all those, I know, I can, hold on, let me unlock the email. Yes, I can see that there's several emails right now. Where's Livy? How come Livy's not on the show? Well, if you missed the first 5 minutes of the show, she is off doing her Livy thing. And she will be back next Friday, as will I, as will Coastal Windage. And so we will talk to you then. Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast.